Parise grew up in Modesto, California, only 2 hours away from Palo Alto. But his first day working in Silicon Valley, he felt like he traveled to a different country.
It was like a very different language. And what I mean by that is like, you know, it's like I heard terms that I never heard of before, like, make sure you BCC this guy, or don't forget to circle back, reply all. I'm like, what does this mean? You know, it was like its own language that I had to learn.
Obviously, terms like reply all aren't tech industry specific. They're just general office terms. But Eric's parents came from Mexico to work as migrant field workers, so he didn't grow up knowing about office culture, but he soon figured it all out.
And I've been involved in the tech space for, you know, almost 5 years.
Eric has worked in marketing and sales at a bunch of different companies, including Waze and Google. And as one of the few Latinos in tech, he's thought a lot about tech's quote-unquote diversity problem. And so he decided to write about it.
So the title of the article is, you know, I'm a Latino in tech, and I think the diversity conversation is broken.
He wrote the article because he felt his experience wasn't being reflected in the diversity conversation. According to Eric, before we can solve the diversity problem, we need to define it. His article, which was published on the website Observer, starts with a description of a scene from Anchorman, the popular 2004 comedy starring Will Ferrell.
And so there's a funny scene where the Channel 5 news team gets brought into a room and Ed Harkin, the manager of the station, you know, tells everyone that he has a big announcement that, you know, there's a big push for diversity and there's going to be changes to the station. And then Champ, one of the main characters, he says,
"What in the hell's diversity?"
And Ron tries to answer because, you know, Ron thinks he's super smart.
"Well, I could be wrong, but I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War."
And I thought that just was hilarious because he was so serious about it, but completely wrong, obviously. And, you know, it's just something that I didn't really think about in the context of the current narrative around diversity and race until I was kind of putting this together. And I was like, we really still have no idea what diversity is.
Eric thinks that diversity is talked about too simplistically.
We apply these big, broad terms to people, you know, the Hispanic culture or, you know, the Black culture. But we forget that within these terms are like very diverse set of individuals. And, you know, my parents are from Mexico. I grew up speaking Spanish. But I have more in common with someone like Aziz Ansari, who's also the child of immigrants, because we have that shared experience of immigration.
And Eric says that a major issue that he feels is often overlooked is people's socioeconomic background.
Just because, you know, this engineer is African-American and this engineer is Latino and this engineer is white, if they all went to Stanford, you know, is that really diverse?
The truth is, all of the measures that Eric brought up and many more are important factors that contribute to creating a diverse staff. And no matter the measure, gender, race, class, education, Silicon Valley does not reflect the workforce population, something that NPR reporter Alina Selyuk knows all too well.
You know, every year the largest tech companies report their so-called diversity numbers, and it's really starting to feel like Groundhog Day.
Alina is going to be my co-host on this episode. But back to Groundhog Day. Why do these diversity reports feel repetitive?
Let's take Facebook. In 2015, Facebook says, "While we've achieved positive movement over the last year, it's clear to all of us we still aren't where we want to be." In 2016, they say, "We still have a long way to go, but as we continue to strive for greater change, we are encouraged by positive hiring trends." 2017, they say, "We aren't where we'd like to be." And if you look at their numbers, 3% of workers are Black, 5% are Hispanic, up very slightly from last year. Women account for 35%, up from 33% the year before. And that's the quote-unquote positive movement they're feeling encouraged by.
So what's going on with these companies? They say they value diversity. Do they actually care? Should they? Why does diversity in tech matter anyway?
When we think about the companies that skyrocketed and became the most influential presence in the economy over the past 5-10 years, it's the tech industry. They are some of the richest companies in the world. But also on the very fundamental level, these are the companies that are framing our lives, our realities, Google, Facebook, Apple. And so it matters who is at the table making the decisions.
So that's obviously sort of the moral reason that you would want more people at the table is because these companies are changing everyone's lives. So you'd hope that everyone has a say in how their lives are being affected. But then there's also a a company profitability side.
Yeah, there was a report in 2015 from McKinsey, which is a major consulting firm. They studied almost 400 public companies, and they found that the companies that had the most diversity when it comes to race, ethnicity, and gender of their staff were significantly more likely to have financial returns higher than their competitors.
So if these companies value diversity, why isn't the tech industry more diverse?
The tech companies often blame something called the pipeline problem.
What's the pipeline problem?
They're basically saying not enough people are out there that are qualified. Not enough people are out there for them to hire. And therefore, that explains why there's not a lot of people of color and not enough women among their staff.
So that's what today's episode is going to be about, the pipeline. Alina and I are going to go through the pipeline and identify the leaks. Where is it that underrepresented groups are dropping out?
And we're going to explore what is being done so that tech can be more inclusive in 10 years, 5 years, and even today.
So, Alina, I traveled to the beginning of the pipeline. I went to downtown LA, where I met a lot of suspicious characters.
What are you dressed as?
A ninja.
A skeleton. Cookie.
A cookie.
A bunch of elementary school kids on Halloween. I was visiting an after-school program called Hola to find out what is being done to get kids interested in tech. Hola stands for Heart of Los Angeles, and it's a competitive after-school program that aims to prepare kids for college. 86% of the kids in the program are Latino. The program serves LA's Rampart District, which is the second most densely populated area in the country. 97% of people live in poverty.
Yet despite the challenges, Hola has managed to thrive in the neighborhood for 28 years.
And within Hola, there's a bunch of programs. There's an arts program, and then there's a sports program, but I was there to check out their scientific arts program. It was designed to get kids interested in what's known as STEAM, science, technology, arts, and math, preparing our next generation of tech leaders. The kids get to do all sorts of cool things in the program, like create 3D printing objects, stop motion animation, and also...
we call it Hover.
This is Abraham Orozco. He's been running the scientific arts program for nearly 11 years. He's telling me about their hovercraft class.
Because it's based on a hovercraft, but it's not really a hovercraft. These only have like a single propeller that face forward.
They don't hover, they just go...
They just move forward.
Okay.
They skid along.
He's teaching a class called Hover, where nothing really hovers. Regardless, the middle school kids at Hola have made their own non-hovering crafts, and the point of today's class is to go outside and actually use them.
The hover crafts don't look anything like those hover boards that were making headlines for catching fire.
They look like remote control cars made out of cardboard.
So what are you doing right now?
Well, right now we're gonna do the tricks and...
So you're trying to get it through the cones?
Yeah.
This is Carlos Vasquez. He's 12 with boundless after-school energy. He's showing me the obstacle course the kids are going to drive their hovercrafts through. Abraham has set up 4 traffic cones and is having the students race around them to see who can do it the fastest. Up first is Carlos.
Oh, wait, I can't control it!
Come back.
After an early crash, he picks himself up and his official time is...
51 seconds.
51, 51.
My turn?
Yay! Michaela Onorato has been quietly looking on from the sidelines, waiting her turn. She's tall with a serious and focused gaze.
Have you named your car?
No.
Sorry, focus. It's not helpful.
Woo! Good job. 16 seconds, so you're winning right now.
Wow!
16.36.
Even with this annoying journalist interrupting her concentration, Michaela takes the lead.
It's hard. It looks really hard.
It's easy when you get a hang.
There are around 5 more kids left, and before anyone else has a chance to go, the race is suddenly interrupted.
Why are we moving?
So there's programming that happens in this space as well. So we kind of just took it over.
But so we're never going to know who won, fair and square?
No.
This is one of the class's biggest obstacles as a program, finding space. The dirt field is the only small open sliver in Lafayette Park where there are all sorts of activities going on. Older guys playing basketball, women chatting on tables, people working out and playing frisbee. But beyond busier than normal park activities, the park can be dangerous. The grants assistant at Ola, Sandy Villanueva, gave me a tour of the whole program and she took me to the rec center at the park.
3 weeks ago, there was a shooting here.
In this place?
Right here. It's a really unfortunate, a teenager got shot and he was killed. But it happened like around 3:30.
When the kids were here?
When the kids were here. But it's just like part of what happens in this neighborhood, you know? Like what, just because of poverty levels, and it's been like this for years now. And that's the reason why Ola started and why it's here.
Ola has helped hundreds of kids go to college, and Abraham has seen a handful of his own students go on to successful technical careers.
One of my students that I taught in high school, he went to school for mechanical engineering and electrical engineering, and I was working at an Air Force base. It's hard. I think there's still the jobs that kids want to get are still kind of tied to traditional jobs, like doctors or... So the kids that do well in STEM classes like tend to move away from those fields.
According to Abraham, a lot of these kids don't want to go into jobs where there's any economic risk involved. And often that's the case for startups and other sorts of computer science jobs. And it's even harder to get girls interested in tech. Not that they shy away from using technology. A couple of girls are sitting close by looking down at their phones.
I think they're like doing Snapchat.
Earlier, I had asked Abraham about how many girls are in the scientific arts program.
Middle school, I know middle school and elementary tend to be a little bit more girl heavy, but high school is definitely not. Like, we only have 2 girls out of 13 in high school.
The way Ola works is that the high schoolers can choose what programs they want to be in, but elementary school and middle school kids do not. So I asked the Snapchatting girls if they chose to be in the scientific arts class.
No. Like, definitely not. So, like, next year, would you want to do something like this again?
Yes. Okay.
Looking at their faces, though, I don't know if I'm so convinced.